Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined as always by Travis Ryer. Be sure to check out the Ryer on YouTube channel. Give it a like, give it a subscribe, smash those buttons. Fantastic content on there as always. Here on this midweeker, we're going to preview this Alabama-Tennessee game coming up at Bryant-Denny Stadium, a 6:30 p.m. kick on ABC. Travis, both teams entering 5-1 on the season, and a big tilt for sure. Second time around for Kalen DeBoer against this team. Obviously took a loss to the Vols last year at Neyland Stadium, and now they come back with both teams looking to avoid that second L. I wrote earlier today, mid-October, if you want to make the playoff, it's a little early to be catching that second L.
It is. And for Alabama, it's that Florida State game that isn't going to leave you alone, it doesn't feel like. You know, even with the win at Georgia, even with the wins over Vanderbilt and Missouri, it's been very impressive. But when you catch that second L, and I do believe it's a matter of time for Alabama. I don't see Alabama just running through the entire rest of the regular season with just that one loss. You're going to revisit late August, and you're probably not going to feel good about it. But, you know, Alabama's playing well and, you know, getting this game at home. Tennessee, we haven't really seen Tennessee away from Neyland Stadium all that much, right? Yeah. You know, and the one time we did, they were very fortunate to get out of Starkville with a W. Did have the neutral site game to open the season, but been a lot of Knoxville for the Tennessee Vols. And in this series, as we know, going back to 2005, it's been absolutely all Alabama and Tuscaloosa.
No doubt about it. The Crimson Tide's been tough to beat at home. Kalen DeBoer yet to lose a game at Bryant-Denny Stadium in a season and a half. So, tough place for opponents to come in, no doubt about it. Back and forth in this series. You know, the history of the series, Travis, is streaky, but it hasn't been very streaky lately because the home team has won this game the last 4 years in a row, going back to Nick Saban's last win
That was his last win over 2023, Alabama. Beat Tennessee in Knoxville in Tuscaloosa to avenge that loss in 2022. So you're right. It's been home team oriented here of late. And you said it earlier, Kalen DeBoer, you need to get wins over the Tennessees and the Auburns as quickly as you can. Because if you get into that job and you go, as we've seen in the past for some guys, you go 3-4 meetings without getting one of those to at least one of those two, if not both, it can be a pretty big anvil that you end up trying to carry around.
It'll catch up to you, no doubt about it. Mike Shula, 1-3 against Tennessee. Mike DuBose, 0-4, I believe, against Tennessee. So things didn't last long for either one of those, albeit for very different reasons, of course, but. It's not the series you want to get behind the sticks on, so to speak. If you're a coach, there's no doubt about it. Tennessee, Travis, went through not two, not three, or even four. How about six head coaches during Nick Saban's 15-game win streak over the Vols? Of course, it began in 08, which was Philip Fulmer's last year at Tennessee. And they went through five more head coaches. Finally getting around to Josh Heupel, who snapped the streak.
Yeah, and you can say, well, you know, that wasn't all because of Alabama, because Tennessee just wasn't beating enough people enough. But I do think it still had something to do with Alabama, because in too many of those meetings, Tennessee wasn't even competitive. And it's one thing to lose to a primary rival. Yeah. It's another thing to get bombed. It felt like year in and year out. And then there were some years where there was a lot of anticipation that this might be the point where Tennessee turns this thing back. You know, I think about it was 2016. Alabama went up there and ran for like 7,000 yards in Knoxville. And, you know, that was the end of, for Butch Jones, basically. And what looked like he was building it up to that. But Josh Heupel's actually gotten the job done now. So, you know, he's taken care of that a couple of times, and you know that grants him a lot of cachet up in East Tennessee.
No question about it. All right, matchups, Travis. Couple of very good offensive teams. There's no doubt about it. The Tennessee offense has been rolling this season. Defense, another story. But for Kane Womack and his Chargers, this is a difficult task. Joey Aguilar has been good, the transfer from Appalachian State. I think he's been pretty darn effective for the ball. If you're Josh Heupel, you've got to be happy with what Joey Aguilar has been able to put together. He's got a really dangerous receiver on the outside in Chris Brazil. And they'll run it well too. They're averaging a lot. They pile up a lot of yards on you running wise. It's a split approach. You know, there's not one horse back there, but they get the job done running it.
They do, and that's really where it starts for them. That with tempo, you know, they want to go fast. They're going to go fast, and if they hit you for a chunk play, they're going to run right up there and probably run zone. They're going to run the football right at you, and try to catch you misaligned as much as anything else. And as we know, that's been problematic for Alabama, whether it's misalignment or not fitting gaps. You know, to Alabama's credit, of late anyway, they've continued to do that, especially early in games, but it feels like they've gotten it fixed. You know, once they've caught their breath a little bit and settled in, you know, you've seen the third down defense show up for Alabama, like it did last week at Missouri when they held the Tigers to what, 1 of 10 on thirds. So I don't know if it's realistic, but look, you know, the last two games, Vanderbilt came in with a high third down conversion rate. Tennessee's coming in with a high third down conversion rate. I think Missouri did too, last week. And Alabama took care of the Commodores and Mizzou. So can they do it again this week? Aguilar is a fascinating guy. It was essentially a trade, you know, Nico for Aguilar going from Tennessee to UCLA and vice versa. This has been an opportunistic Alabama defense. They can take the football away. And Aguilar going back to App State, he can be prone at times to turning the football over. He threw, I think, 24 interceptions in 2 years in Boone. He had a stretch here before last week against Arkansas where I think he threw four interceptions in two games. So I think they can turn him over, even if they're not a high pressure rate in terms of getting heat on him, although that would certainly help.
It would help a lot. And you know, you mentioned misalignments being an issue for Alabama defensively. You know, missed gaps here and there. You're right. I mean, they did a really nice job on Amarrad Hardy last night. They did a good job against Vanderbilt the week before, and Vanderbilt can run it on a lot of good defenses. What you worry about, I think, with Alabama's defense, Travis, is that when you do hit them, you can gash them.
Yes.
If Alabama this year has allowed 11 rushes of 20 yards or more, and the only team in the SEC worse than that is Arkansas.
Yes, and Tennessee has quite a few rushes of 20 yards or more, and Deshaun Bishop is kind of where that starts. He had a scary looking injury against Arkansas last week, but it sounds like it was more of a scare than anything else because at the time I happened to see that during that game and it felt like the cart was coming out or something, but it wasn't severe at all. So that's great news for Tennessee, but you got to deal with him. You know, he's a former walk-on. You watch this guy right now in that offense, doesn't look like a former walk-on. So he'll be a handful, but that's where it'll start for the Alabama defense. And absolutely. To your point, Alabama, in terms of red zone defense, hasn't been horrible this year, but you got to give yourself a chance to play red zone defense. You know, these runs just can't go 50, 60 yards and into the end zone. When they give themselves a chance to play red zone defense, they can be fairly effective.
They can. Chris Brazil on the outside, worth talking about too, Travis, for sure. He's had a big year, I think 7 touchdown catches, real tough to deal with as that guy who's frequently going to be lined up way out by the sideline. They get to get those wide splits in that Tennessee offense. I asked Kane Womack on Monday if there's any inclination to shadow him with Dejon Lee, the 6'4" corner, who looks like he's primed to start taking over more as a starter. And, you know, he kind of hinted that that's something they'll look at, but he said, hey, don't forget, Xavien Brown's not small, right? He's 6'2".
Yeah, they've got good size out there with those two guys now, if they're going to play more with Lee, which it looks like they seem committed to doing to go along with Brown and Tennessee. You're right. Those wide splits, I mean, that's trademark. That's something you're going to get from Josh Heupel, and it's been problematic for Alabama in the past, as we've seen with Hendon Hooker, who threw for a ton of yards, 3 or 4 years ago in Knoxville. So those switch releases off of those wide splits, we actually saw Alabama use that concept against Vanderbilt a couple weeks ago offensively. So that tells me it's something that Alabama defensively has likely seen a good bit of even before this week. And that helps. That helps. Now, you got to be able to do it at speed, because they're going to line up, do it quick, try to get you caught, and you bust coverages, things like that, and hit you for the big play. So, but that's absolutely a big part of what Heupel's going to do with those receivers. And even Miles Kitzelman, the former Alabama player who's now in Knoxville and has really found a great home up there. I never would have imagined Miles Kitzelman being kind of featured in any offense throwing the football, but he does a good job as a two-way guy for the Vols at that spot.
No doubt, no doubt. I think the wide splits with those wide receivers really do more for the Tennessee running game than anything else, because they create space on the perimeter that way, obviously, and it kind of opens things up when you spread that defense out horizontally. When it comes to the pass, I don't know if it helps a lot or not necessarily, Travis, because if you're a corner, you can play it. You can play inside leverage out there, because the route's got to either be a vertical or it's in breaking. You don't have to worry about anything out breaking when the guy's standing right by the sideline, right? So.
Yeah, I agree, but that 2022 game, it killed Alabama. I mean, Hyatt got drafted, I think, in the first round by the Giants off that game. I mean, what really? Because Alabama never really covered him
Ate him
throughout the
up.
game. Hendon Hooker probably went as high in the draft as he did, and he had a good year, don't get me wrong, in 2022. But boy, that shellacking, shell shocking of that Alabama defense. Alabama never got the switch releases and the wide splits figured out in that game. And they, you know what? Even the year before, in Heupel's first year, in Tuscaloosa, they got hit with some explosives out of that. I thought last year they actually were better against it for the first half of the game. And then in the second half, they gave up too much on the defensive side. First half defensively last year in Knoxville was what Alabama needed to be. The offense just didn't really complement it at all.
All right, Alabama's offense against that Tennessee defense, Travis. Let's dig into that just a little bit. The Vols defense has been problematic this season. They've given up a lot of points. Gave up a bunch of points to Georgia. Bear in mind that game went into overtime, so that a little bit of an explanation there. But and I guess Mississippi State, that went into overtime too, didn't it?
Think so. Yeah, it did. And it probably shouldn't have. That's one Mississippi State is still kicking itself about. And the last couple of teams, Mississippi State and Arkansas, what, both rushed for over 200 yards against this Tennessee defense. Now you got to think about, okay, stylistically, does Alabama really line up with what Arkansas does and what Mississippi State is doing under Jeff Lebby? I would say for the most part, not really. But it's something that you feel like you can do, and that takes us back to Jam Miller and kind of his status and what that running back situation might look like. And could this offensive line start to narrow it back down in terms of rotation and how many guys they really want to go with?
Yeah, you mentioned the running backs. The initial injury report from the SEC just came out pretty much right before we came on the airwaves here, and Miller is listed as questionable. Kalen DeBoer on his radio show earlier tonight said that he's making good progress. That really doesn't tell you a whole lot, but we'll see if he's able to go against Tennessee. As we mentioned on Sunday, if not, then what you'd have to expect is some kind of Kevin Riley, Daniel Hill combo in the backfield for Alabama. And not surprisingly, Travis, Derek Meadows out. He's also in concussion protocol, And he took a whale of a shot against Missouri. Not sure when we'll see him again.
Yeah, I think Meadows was pretty much out before he hit the ground in Missouri. That was brutal. And Jam might have been too. I was worried that with Jam, it might have been the double whammy, a head injury plus maybe a re-injury to the shoulder collarbone deal based on the way he landed and the way he fell after that hit. But I know Kalen has talked about here in the last 12 hours or so that, you know, Jam's moving forward in a positive way, but that doesn't really tell me, is he practicing? Yeah. Right. I mean, if he's in protocol and he's moving through protocol in a good way, that's great. That's great. But it's probably greater for next week in South Carolina than it is maybe this week. We've talked about this many times before, right? In terms of Wednesday and, you know, what a guy's able to do, you know, you usually get a better idea of that in retrospect, kind of like Ryan Williams last week, watching him last Saturday, not really be involved as much in that game plan. It felt like, wow, by Wednesday of last week, he must not have been doing a whole lot.
No doubt. Alabama's depth at running back could be certainly tested a little bit.
Sam in the comments here, Chase, says Jam is practicing. He was in a black jersey at practice. Well, black jersey means you're not in contact. Yeah. So you might be out there. When we say practicing, we're saying practicing.
11 on 11 participation. Yeah.
Teamwork, pretty much everything. Now, you know, he's a veteran player, Chase. Maybe you just roll with it and say, look, we got enough out of him on Wednesday in a black jersey that we feel comfortable with him, you know, out there. But this is going to be a full speed collision game because Tennessee's linebackers are very active and they like to bring them in the pass rush. So, you know, you better be not just cleared, but really ready to go to take on what you're going to see Saturday.
Yeah, you mentioned the linebackers coming in the pass rush, Travis. Tennessee leads the league in sacks with 26. I think the next highest total is 22. Much better than Alabama. Alabama's sitting on 9 sacks for the season in 6 games. Mm-hmm. So they can really get after the quarterback. Still, though, in terms of points allowed, 29-plus a game. In terms of yardage allowed, they're giving up almost 400 a game, which is near the bottom of the league. Nick Saban used to say repeatedly, Travis, that sacks are not a metric that determines game outcomes or necessarily even overall defensive success. And I guess that's a point maybe he'll bring up again on College Game Day when this game comes up.
Yeah, we heard that one a few times, didn't we? Yeah. Through the years, for sure. I think Tennessee's also second in the SEC in tackles for loss behind just Oklahoma. So disruptive, like to try to get you behind the sticks. I think the positive for Alabama is this offense, more so than a year ago, is built to overcome second and 13, mm-hmm. you know, or second and long. Than it was a year ago because it can push the football in the intermediate and also deeper areas of the field with Ty Simpson. Also, quick game keeps you out of, you know, the more quick game, the more proficient you are in that and also mm-hmm. screens, things like that. Now you can dictate more to a defense like Tennessee. Tennessee wants to do all the dictating on defense, and they're not afraid to play some man coverage and bring people. Something I thought Alabama in the game a year ago really could have done more of is move the quarterback, you know, off some zone read action, get some things out in the flats where you outflank them because they are aggressive in their approach. Alabama did it a time or two with kind of that slice play with the tight end and releasing people in the flat. Mm-hmm. But I'd be surprised if they just go into this game, Ryan Grubb and DeBoer, and say, well, we're just going to sit Ty Simpson in the pocket all day long. And I think where you can hurt Tennessee and its aggressiveness is if by design you get the quarterback moving a little bit.
Yeah. And I think Simpson's, to me anyway, he's shown that he's effective as a passer rolling out to either side. Yep. A lot of quarterbacks are really only comfortable rolling out and throwing to arm side. I've seen Simpson make a few really nice throws rolling away from arm side,
Can rip
which
it.
can be a tricky thing to do.
Yeah, it's a very athletic play. It's kind of a little bit,
It's
as you
footwork,
know,
you got to
and
have your footwork.
it's baseball footwork too, you
Yeah.
know, where you get these infielders going away from their arm side and kind of they regroup and gather themselves and then make that strike, that strong throw to first base. It's kind of that type of move, and he's definitely got that down.
All right, up front for Alabama on the line of scrimmage, Travis, as far as the way the offensive line is playing, we mentioned, I think, on the Sunday nighter that Simpson's been taking some hits lately, 8 sacks over the last 2 games against Vanderbilt and Missouri. I think he's been sacked 13 times on the year. Pass protection obviously is going to be huge because we just said Tennessee gets after the quarterback like no other. Run blocking though is going to be huge in this one too, Travis. And like you said, we're watching this to see if that rotation on the offensive line is ever going to taper down toward just five. Right now, they're just trying different combinations left and right at offensive guard. We're kind of waiting to see if Michael Carroll takes over at right tackle. Ryan Grubb made the comment Monday that Carroll is, I don't remember his exact words, but he basically said Carroll's on the brink of being an everyday guy. So we shall see, but that's something to watch too.
Yeah, I think it is. I'll say this for all that too, though. Alabama hasn't been penalized, I think, pre-snap or procedurally as much as you would think they would have been for what they've done with that rotation. Alabama, I believe, is the least penalized team in the SEC right now. Think about that. I
Hard to
mean,
believe,
we never talked about that in the Nick Saban era, really. They were,
especially near the end.
no, we didn't.
Yeah.
It's been impressive from that perspective. I'll say this too. Tennessee, I think defensively he's given up 13 rushing touchdowns already on the season. So you get into some of these red zone goal line situational things, you should be able to have some success there against this Tennessee defense.
We see Caden Proctor doing something crazy in this one, Travis, for the fourth game in a row. And until he doesn't, we got to assume he does, right?
Tex Tider says Proctor should kick any field goal over 45 yards. And you know us, I would when I saw that from Tex, I said he's talking about bringing Michael Proctor back. Remember? From those
We're
early
too old,
90s
right?
team. Yeah, you'd have to probably go get that Proctor out of the houndstooth to get him to try back in the day a 45 yarder. But no, Caden Proctor, I mean, why not? I mean, we haven't seen him throw it yet. We've seen him in the Wildcat. We've seen him out wide. We've seen him at a halfback. So, and if nothing else, you've got it out there now. And it's something that teams are start preparing for ghosts, which is what you love. Because if they're preparing for ghosts, they're taking away from the time they probably need to be preparing for what more of your actual bread and butter is as an offense.
I agree with that completely. And I also think, Travis, that now that it's a thing, now that it's something that defensive coordinators surely are paying at least a little bit more attention to, I'm waiting for play action.
Why not?
I'm waiting for the fake to Caden Proctor and then a little pop pass to the tight end for a 4-yard touchdown or something like that, right?
Have him back there, a little RPO. A little zone read fake, and then boy, middle of the field, that's very daring for an offensive tackle, but yeah, why not? You know, at this point, it's gonna go until it doesn't work, and then everyone's gonna lose their mind when it doesn't work. You know, for all the success, when it doesn't work for the first time, you'll have a spiraling, you know, of a good bit of the fan base.
Watch the tight end guy is going to be, oh, they're overdoing it, guy. They're overdoing Proctor
I
too.
told you, Grubb had to be the smartest guy in the room. That's coming. It's coming.
Going to be fun. How about special teams, Travis? Your thoughts on where Alabama's sitting in that respect, as far as the field goal kicking, the punting. Blake Dowd, I think, is averaging a little north of 40 yards per kick. You want to see a little bit more from him, certainly.
You do. I guess the fortunate side of it is they've been good enough offensively, especially holding on to the football too, you know, that even when they haven't scored, they've possessed it in a way that's been very beneficial. And, you know, we've had some comments in the show chat tonight about time of possession again this week, because it's been tremendous the last couple of games for sure. Alabama's last in the SEC in punting right now. And I've spent a lot of this week going back and forth with some Alabama fans about Talty and, you know, his misses. And, you know, he's 9 of 13 on field goals. And 3 of his 4 misses have come from 47, 49, and 53. I mean, you'd love for him to be perfect. Don't get me wrong. But in his first year on the job, if you told me he was going to be 9 of 13 and 3 of his 4 misses were going to be from that type of range, it wouldn't have surprised me. I wouldn't tell you that's good, but I wouldn't have said, oh man, I can't believe this. You know,
right.
And then I get the, well, one of these games is going to come down to a kick. And then what? We're going to find out, you know, based on what he's done to this point. I don't feel either way that he can't get it done in a big spot or he can. Some of Alabama's best kickers didn't get it done in some big spots. They got it done in some big spots. They didn't get it done in every big spot. Right. Speaking of Tennessee, Will Reichard, 2022, 50-yarder to win it in Knoxville, goes wide right. And Will Reichard is a big-time NFL kicker and was one of the greatest, if not the greatest, to ever do it for Alabama. So, you know, it's a tough road to hoe sometimes at that spot. But, you know, I think that more than anything, last week I didn't like the penalties on special teams. I mean, you got to clean that up. You've done a good job with penalties as a whole. So you don't want that to continue to be a thing this week. And as far as Talty goes, we're not going to know until we know. And when he's in that spot.
You know, tied to all this too is Alabama's aggressiveness on fourth down. They've gone for, I think, 16 fourth down attempts on the season. They've succeeded on 10 of those. But I don't get the sense that DeBoer's aggressiveness on fourth down has anything to do with trust in Dowd or Talty, for that matter. I think it's more of an analytics thing with him. I think DeBoer's playing for 7, no matter who's kicking, no matter who's punting. That's the sense I get anyway.
I agree. I think it precedes, you know, just this year. And CeCe here in the show chat makes a good point. He says Talty has made a difference in our SEC wins. Absolutely. You know, if he was as bad as some people have tried to make him out to be, you don't beat Georgia, because he made a big one in that game. Yeah, he had a miss. He did. You don't win last week because he actually made 2 in that game against Missouri, and you won by 3. So, he hadn't been perfect, but I agree with you on DeBoer. And why wouldn't you? I mean, as much as anything, he's got utmost confidence in the guys that he's leaning on the most to deliver in those spots. And he's also riding that hot guy. He's riding a hot hand right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it cools off, then we may see him, you know, revert to more 3s or punts or things like that.
Yeah. And when Nicholson was kicking last year, I thought DeBoer was pretty aggressive on fourth down too. I think that's just who he is, right? I mean, we saw DeBoer last year go for some a couple fourth and ones in scoreless games in the first quarter. I think he went for a fourth and one last year at his own 35 on the opening drive. I mean, he likes that fourth down.
He does, and I'm going to look it up right now because I don't think Nicholson tried. I mean, Nicholson only tried 10 field goals last year.
Yeah.
In 13 games.
Right. You know?
I mean, he was 8 of 10 and just attempted 13. So, you know, it's just kind of who he is, I think, in terms of what he's going to look to get done in possession plays.
Grubb was asked about the fourth down play calling on Monday, and you just the night before here on Talking Tide We're talking about how Grubb always seems to have an extra play in the bag late in the game when they need it, et cetera. And I thought it was one of the best answers Grubb's given all season long. He said, look, I've got some plays I like, and I got some other plays on the sheet that I might not like quite as much. And he said, as long as I've got one still in the bag that I like, if it's fourth down, it's a go. If DeBoer wants to go, I'll tell him, yeah, I got the call for this.
I heard that. That was a great answer, because it was as transparent as you'll hear a play caller ever be.
Yeah.
And you know, it just, you know, like he said, you know, if I'm out of place, I'll tell him maybe we need to punt here.
Yeah.
You know, and most of these guys that dial it up, they don't ever want to tell the head coach that. Oh, I got right. one. I got one. I got. Yeah. Yeah, it's a triple reverse pass, you know, that gets thrown into the third row, you know.
All right, the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Moving on, I want to thank our listeners and viewers, as always. Ask you to contribute as well to Parker Covers Alabama, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting wheelchaired Alabama residents. You can help us out at parkercoversalabama.com. It's named, of course, for Mike Parker, a friend of mine and Travis's, who was in a wheelchair for 20 plus years, passed away this past February. We love Mike, and we know he would love what we're doing with Parker Covers Alabama. Check it out at parkercoversalabama.com. All right, Talking Tide, moving on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Travis, talking some SEC action this weekend. It's a full slate, Travis. It's not one of those idle weeks. Matter of fact, let's see. I'm glancing. Yes, yes, yeah. Every single SEC team is not only in action, but they're all playing. There's no non-conference games. It's eight straight SEC games. A lot to get into. Vanderbilt, a 2.5-point favorite at home against LSU. That could be a fun one for sure. OU at South Carolina. Texas A&M at Arkansas. You got Ole Miss at Georgia. Number 5 versus number 9 in that one, Travis. Top 10 matchup. 2:30 on ABC. We'll probably start there here in just a second. Mississippi State at Florida, Texas at Kentucky, and of course the aforementioned Tennessee at Alabama. Also got Missouri going to the Plains to take on Auburn. But what about Ole Miss and Georgia, Travis? A lot of storylines there. You know, Lane Kiffin and Kirby Smart know each other very well. You got a stout Georgia defense against an Ole Miss offense that you know is dangerous and capable of putting up a lot of points. That's the one that I think is going to have a ton of eyeballs on it.
No doubt about it. You talked about some of these teams that already have a loss, and Georgia playing at home. This schedule set up for Georgia this way: Alabama at home, Ole Miss at home, Texas a little bit later at home. So Georgia really couldn't have asked for much better. And to come off that miraculous, in some ways, win over Auburn last week, and conversely, Ole Miss is a team we really haven't seen away from Oxford, it feels like, right? I mean, we're going to be mid-October, and it feels like we're just going to get a real sense of Ole Miss away from Vaught Hemingway. And Trinidad Chambliss has been a revelation for that offense at Ole Miss, but this is really the first time we're going to see him in this type of environment. So, you know, Georgia's a tough team to figure out at times. Offensively, they can be a wreck like they were, and give Auburn credit. First half last Saturday night on the Plains. And Georgia, until after the controversial fumble call on Jackson Arnold on the goal line, and then Georgia went down and got 3 to make it 10-3 at halftime. But a lot of that was Auburn helping out and the review system and everything else. But yeah, I think this is a big moment for Georgia. It's a big moment for Gunnar Stockton. I just, a lot of years I would look at this matchup, Chase, and say, you know what, Georgia's just going to be so much better on the lines of scrimmage that, you know, for all the lane, for all the other stuff with that offense, and Georgia's going to be too much. But I think kind of like last year in Oxford, I think Ole Miss feels fine about matching up with Georgia in those areas for a change.
I'll be interested to see what Kiffin does at quarterback if things don't go right early in this game, because Trinidad Chambliss, as good as he's been this year, and I like him, I think he's a lot of fun to watch, very talented guy, heady guy. They only scored, I think it was
24
against a Washington State defense that's given up a ton of points this year. Yeah. North Texas scored 49 on Washington State.
Yeah, and I think
Ole Miss scored half that at home.
I think San Diego State dropped a bomb on Washington State. I mean, it was a couple of Mountain West teams or something, you know, dropped bombs on Washington State. And that was a tough game to figure last week for Ole Miss. Now, look, you know, you kind of got it sandwiched there, and Georgia's on the other side of that. I'm like you. I like Trinidad Chambliss. I guess I'm just not all in with him like a lot of people are. A lot of people, you know, they just think, you know, he's a Heisman Trophy type guy. I haven't really seen that from him, and I think we're going to learn a lot more, to your point, about him on the road in Athens in an absolute must-win type of situation, it feels like, for the Dawgs.
Austin Simmons back healthy. He's not on the injury report at all. So if Ole Miss goes into halftime and they're only got 3 points or even 10 points, I think we could see some Austin Simmons in this game.
Simmons came off the bench after Dart went out temporarily against Georgia last year and really sparked that Ole Miss win over UGA. Was tremendous. I mean, he just ripped the UGA defense in that series. And I'm kind of with you. I don't think Lane probably goes into it planning to do that, but he knows what he's got in his back pocket.
How about Missouri at Auburn, Travis? You talked about Ole Miss playing pretty much all at home earlier in the year. You're exactly right. The only road game Ole Miss has played up to this point is in Lexington. Missouri has played Auburn is Missouri's first road game. They played their first six games at home.
Yeah, it's crazy. Some of these schedules that we've seen with some of these teams. It's kind of a Saban era question that you used to have for some of these teams after games like Missouri had with Alabama. It's the, are they going to let Alabama beat them twice? You know, Missouri, from a mindset perspective, really impressed me against Alabama because they kept coming. And, you know, defensively, they're there for all the smoke in terms of physicality.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't think they're going to have an issue getting it back and, you know, being what they need to be in terms of engagement in this game. You do wonder about Auburn at some point, though. I mean, the way that Auburn has lost games, or some Auburn people would tell you have had games taken from them from an officiating perspective, what is the tipping point for that team? And we've already seen it with, you know, a departure of a key player here, what, in the last couple of 3 days from that Auburn offense. So, you know, is Hugh Freeze able to kind of keep that thing stabilized enough where at some point they can start to, you know, get this turnaround going and then point towards the game we know Auburn's always pointing towards. And that's not just Alabama, but Alabama in Auburn to cap the regular season.
To me, Travis, I think, speaking of coaches on the hot seat, you look at Hugh Freeze, you look at Billy Napier, definitely the two hottest seats in the league right now. I think Hugh Freeze is starting to lose that Auburn locker room. I mean, you look at what some of these players put on social media about this team captain, Alston, that's been jettisoned. Hugh Freeze did not handle that well. Even if the right thing to do was for the player and the team to part ways, Freeze didn't handle it well. You got players on social media with some making some comments that certainly make it sound like they're not happy with Hugh Freeze. And they're at home, you know, and obviously when Auburn's at home, anything can happen. We've seen that before. But I like Missouri to win that game. They're favored by 1.5. Florida, on the other hand, there's talk that Billy's going to be done this weekend. He's got Mississippi State coming into the Swamp. I see this Gator team rallying a little bit for him, and I hesitate to I hesitate to make any recommendations in that regard because Florida's just not very good, right? And
no.
I mean, they showed that against A&M last week. But I do think they want to play for Billy in Gainesville more than they want to play for Hugh on the Plains.
Yeah, I guess they could have shown it a lot more for Billy last week in a big spot at Texas A&M, especially coming off the win at Texas. But, you know, A&M is a team that eventually we're going to have to give them their flowers, I guess, because that was impressive from the Aggies. Yeah, I don't know if Mississippi State goes in there and for the first time in Jeff Lebby's season and a half on the job gets an SEC win. If that's Mississippi State's first SEC win in a couple of years on Saturday in Gainesville,
gotta go.
I don't know how he coaches against Georgia, because not only that, you're going to be going into the bye week if you're Florida. Right. So it lines up.
Yeah.
If you don't beat Mississippi State and you got the bye week, I don't know how he coaches against Georgia. I don't think Billy Napier's seat is hot. I think it's an ejection seat. I think it's ready to go. And so I worry about Missouri, back to them real quick. Bo Prabula on the road in that spot, you know, like you said, they haven't played a road game yet.
Yeah.
Now, if they come out and they establish sort of some dominance and, you know, get up a couple scores early, then he'll probably be fine. But if Auburn musters enough to get just a lead in that game, that's where I worry about them with the quarterback situation.
Couple of real quick, how about that LSU Vanderbilt game? You like the Commodores at home, Travis? I think I do.
I do, but I'm telling you, if Blake Baker and the rest of that LSU defense, they can make that a I think they can make it a 13-10 game. I still think that defense for LSU is that capable. But right now it's hard to go against Vanderbilt, you know? And so I would probably lean a little bit towards the home team there, but I'm just telling you, I can envision where the damn LSU defense just takes that over themselves and gets it done on the road.
Let me throw a couple over-unders at you, Travis. See what you think of these. Alabama, Tennessee, over-under 59.5. Big number. It's a big
That's a big number. I mean, I think why it could go over is because at least one of these teams plays fast. You know, Tennessee plays fast. And as you outlined earlier, they have a recent history of explosiveness on offense, and Alabama defensively has struggled with some of that. So I overestimated that total for Alabama Vanderbilt a couple weeks ago. And in part, what I forgot was that, or I didn't think about enough, was that neither Alabama or Vanderbilt play fast. Right. They're not tempo offenses. They're not looking to both get off 80 snaps. So that's where I think it could be a little bit different with Alabama and Tennessee. I would probably still, though, be inclined to go under that. That's a lot of points. 59.5. What about
you? It's a bunch. It's a bunch. Ole Miss, Georgia, 54.5.
I think that goes under.
Yeah.
I think if Washington State Ole Miss was 45 last week, and like you said, these guys know each other. So, unless there's just a plethora of turnovers and short fields and even non-offensive scores, which the man loves for you not to factor into things.
Yeah.
I would be inclined to go under that too.
And then the last one, and this is the biggest number on the board in the SEC over-under-wise. The man's got A&M and Arkansas at 60.5, Travis. And I know Arkansas games can get into the 60s real easy. It does not take much. Taysom Green can throw three touchdowns, run for one, and then throw a pick six for you to give you seven the other way, too. And Bob, you know, Bobby likes to go fast here and there, but you know what? A&M will grind it on you offensively.
And as you said earlier, Arkansas can't slow me and you down in the run game. So, you know, I think Le'Veon Moss is out, but you know, A&M still has a couple of three capable backs, and the quarterback can run it, Marcel Reed. So, yeah. I'm kind of with you there that Elko at the end of the day is a defensive guy. And if he has his druthers, that thing isn't going to be a shootout. Now, to your point, Arkansas with Bobby can get you up there. I mean, they got Tennessee into the 60s total last week in Knoxville.
Yeah. Arkansas consistently participates in the highest over under game in the league. We fairly consistently week to week with that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what Bobby does. You know, he's going to have something ready offensively every week. And yeah, he's trying to nail that permanent gig down again over there in Fayetteville. And I think with every other firing that we're seeing in college football, it's probably helping him, because those guys, you know, or some of those guys are going to be in the market, but relative to what you would get with Petrino and the already documented track record of success he has in that job, which is a tough job.
Yeah.
You can talk about having to fire him for his behavior and all those things, but you know what you didn't fire him for? Not winning at Arkansas, which that's been tough to come by.
They get a conduct discount with him if they take him on full time?
Yeah, they're probably, you know, have a no motorcycle clause, you know. Well, oh, man.
We've been a little long with this podcast, but we owed it to him, Travis, because we started a little late. That was because of me. I had some technical difficulties that we'll hopefully have ironed out for the Sunday nighter. But enjoy going a little long with this one tonight.
Yeah, it's fun, you know. What else you got? What else are you going to do on a Wednesday night?
Yeah. Okay. There you go. All right. That's going to wrap us up here on the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Had a lot of fun with it. Be sure to tune in on Sunday night when we recap Alabama's home game against the Tennessee Volunteers. Until then, so long.